From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Palestinians seize the world stage. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. To a standing ovation from the General Assembly, PLO leader Mahmoud Abbas applied for full Palestinian membership in the United Nations today. On the streets of Ramallah, rapturous crowds waved flags and cheered a speech that attacked Israel as an occupying power defiant of UN resolutions. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, in turn, attacked militant Islam and said peace will not be achieved by UN resolutions, but only by negotiations between the parties. Will today's actions renew the peace process? What are the implications for American diplomacy in the Middle East? On Reporter's Notebook later on, the U.S. escalates accusations against Pakistan. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world, uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
Hello again, Warren Alney, back with To the Point. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has demanded membership in the United Nations for the Palestinian territories. We'll hear Israel's reaction, came from Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of that country, and what it all means for U.S. diplomacy at the U.N. and in the Middle East itself. On Reporter's Notebook, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has become the highest American official to blame Pakistan for attacks on U.S. targets in Afghanistan. Now we'll hear about that, the ongoing dispute about Pakistan's ISI, the intelligence organization attacked often these days by the United States. Let's turn now to the United Nations, where we heard this today from the president of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, Mahmoud Abbas.
Mr. President, I would like to inform you that before delivering this statement, I, in my capacity as president of the State of Palestine and chairman of the Executive Committee of the Palestine Liberation Organization, submitted to His Excellency Mr. Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the United Nations, an application for the admission of Palestine on the basis of the borders of June 4, 1967, with Al-Quds Al-Sharif as its capital, as a full member of the United Nations.
Through the voice of a translator, obviously, that was Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas today addressing the UN Assembly in a speech denouncing Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories and violations of UN resolutions.
The core issue here is that the Israeli government refuses to commit to terms of reference for the negotiations that are based on international law and UN resolutions. And it frantically continues to intensify building settlements on the territory of the state, of the future state of Palestine. Settlement activities embody the core of a policy of colonial military occupation of the land of the Palestinian people and all of the brutality of aggression and racial discrimination against our people that this policy entails.
Very shortly after that, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel had a heated response denouncing militant Islam and saying this about the idea of Palestinian membership in the United Nations.
The truth is that Israel wants peace. The truth is that I want peace. The truth is that in the Middle East, at all times, but especially during these turbulent days, peace must be anchored in security. The truth is that we cannot achieve peace through UN resolutions, but only through direct negotiations between the parties. The truth is that so far the Palestinians have refused to negotiate. The truth is that Israel wants peace with a Palestinian state, but the Palestinians want a state without peace. And the truth is, you shouldn't let that happen.
Again, high drama at the UN General Assembly today. Karn Ross is a former British diplomat to the United Nations. He was founding director of the nonprofit diplomatic advisory group Independent Diplomat. Karn Ross, thank you very much for being on our program today.
Thanks for having me.
How do you assess all this? Is this, as some have said, a historic moment at the United Nations or something else?
Well, in UN terms, it certainly is something pretty dramatic. It's not often that you get such stirring rhetoric and standing ovations and such a clear contrast in positions as we saw today at the General Assembly. But whether it is an historic moment in terms of facts on the ground and the Middle East peace process itself is an entirely other matter.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation. We first need to take a very brief break. Once again, we're talking about what happened today at the United Nations and the prospect of the Palestinians becoming a member of that body. It's not statehood they are asking for. It is membership in the United Nations. We'll hear more about what that might mean on the ground, as Karn Ross said, and also for American diplomacy and its role in the Middle East and in the peace process. We'll be right back with To the Point from PRI.
To the Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Well, we're only back with To the Point, once again talking about the very dramatic moments today at the United Nations General Assembly. And Karn Ross is with us. He, again, is the leader of the Diplomatic Advisory Group Independent Diplomat and was himself a diplomat at the United Nations the last time that the Palestinians attempted to raise their profile. Karn Ross, certainly the profile has been raised. What now are the procedures that we can expect to see?
Well, the Palestinians have submitted the request for membership to the Secretary General. He will now pass it to the Security Council for initial consideration. And in theory, the Security Council then has to decide whether to pass it to the General Assembly for a decision to make Palestine a full member. But the U.S. has already made clear that it will not endorse such a recommendation. It will veto such a recommendation. So that will not happen in this case. Palestine will not become a full member of the United Nations.
So that won't happen. What about going then next to the General Assembly and asking for special status that would give the Palestinians access to the International Criminal Court?
Well, that's a possibility, but we don't yet know what's going to happen at the Security Council. It's quite possible that the U.S. and its allies could use procedure at the Security Council to stymie the whole process. When an application is received at the Security Council, a committee of the council has to be formed. That committee has to operate by consensus, i.e. unanimity. So it may not go to a vote for the Security Council. That may hold things up in the General Assembly. But if it does go to the General Assembly, we can expect that the General Assembly will fairly quickly decide to make Palestine an observer state, and that will bring with it certain legal rights.
But as you're suggesting, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We don't even know if the Palestinians have the votes in the UN Security Council to move forward.
That's correct. It's partly a matter of votes, but it's also partly a matter of procedure. But the Palestinians may be able to argue that things are blocked in the Security Council and thus they can go to the General Assembly. That certainly happened before, and the momentum is certainly with them here. I mean, it was an extraordinary moment at the General Assembly this morning. The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas got a standing ovation. You don't often see that at the General Assembly. That seems to me to speak of an enormous international support for what the Palestinians are trying to do, but also enormous international frustration with the peace process as it's currently constituted.
Again, Karn Ross, former British diplomat at the United Nations and now with Independent Diplomat. Stay with us, if you will. You mentioned that facts on the ground would be extremely important. Daoud Kutab is with us. He is a Palestinian journalist, former professor of journalism. He's been recently in Ramallah, currently is at home in Amman, Jordan. And Daoud Kutab, it's always good to have you on our program.
Thank you.
I understand that there were rapturous crowds. We saw them on television today in Ramallah. It may be that there were attacks, exchanges of various kinds of rocks and weaponry of one kind or another on the part of the Israelis. How would you describe the situation there from your standpoint?
Well, in fact, there was two public events. On Wednesday, there was a big celebration, basically as a kind of encouragement for Mahmoud Abbas when he arrived in New York. And today, there was a lot of public events preceding the television program, television and address, in which Palestinians throughout the West Bank held rallies, waved flags, gave speeches, had folklore dancing and so on in celebration of the speech and the impeding application for statehood. So it's been a festive, publicly supportive expression of Palestinian support. I think one poll showed 83% of Palestinians fully supporting Mahmoud Abbas's move. There's been a few people here and there. The Islamic movement, Hamas, has been a bit neutral to closer to opposition, but generally it's been very, very supportive.
What are the prospects, if in fact it doesn't happen, as Karen Ross suggested might be the case, of there being expectations created that will be unfulfilled, and what might be the consequences of that?
That is a question that many have asked, and there, it is a question of worry to some. Mahmoud Abbas has said that the Palestinian Authority will not allow any violence of any kind against the Israelis or in check, you know, hot points near the checkpoint. So the Palestinians are committed not to use violence. But, of course, there will be disappointment if nothing happens, even though I would say that sooner or later there will be negotiations. And I think what happened today, no matter how it turns out, has somewhat changed the paradigm of the negotiations. I think the Palestinian negotiating team will feel stronger and empowered by the international support that Mahmoud Abbas got in the UN today.
But there aren't negotiations going on as yet.
Eventually there will be. Both sides have publicly said they want to have negotiations, and the international community led by the U.S. and Europe and others are very much interested in negotiations. The question is, on what basis do you negotiate? And here there's two issues. The first, the Palestinians say, should be based on the 67 borders, and also that there should be no more settlement activity during the negotiations, because it's as if you are negotiating over a pizza pie and the other side is eating it while he's negotiating. So it's going to become smaller and smaller as you negotiate. And so Palestine said, look, let's negotiate, but if you're still building Jewish settlements in our area, in the area for the Palestinian state, that's not a very good sign that you're serious about negotiations.
Let me go back to Karen Ross. You've been at the United Nations, or you were at the United Nations for a long time, and you've watched this process over many years. Do you think this has changed the paradigm?
I'm not sure. The trouble is the Palestinians have been talking about changing the paradigm, expressing their frustration with the way it's currently run for a very long time. The trouble is the process is in the hands of Israel and the U.S., which is clearly, the U.S. is clearly insisting that the paradigm should not change, that this needs to be a bilateral process between Israel and the Palestinians, arbitrated or mediated by the U.S. I wonder, though, if this episode here at the United Nations will not force a rethink, though, of that policy. It was pretty extraordinary to see the U.S. sitting silently, glumly, whilst the rest of the hall stood up in pretty effusive applause for the Palestinian president this morning. The reception for Netanyahu, by contrast, was pretty frosty. Not everything is decided at the United Nations, but there is a kind of dynamic here at work, and I've had diplomats tell me here that they are beginning to question whether there should not be simply a new structure. Sarkozy, the president, French president, has started to talk about deadlines and a new way of looking at this dispute.
as well. So clearly this idea is gaining momentum.
Mr. Abbas mentioned that a year ago, President Obama stood before the UN and said he hoped for peace in the Middle East within 1 year. There's some irony that the United States now is opposing their effort. I should say not peace in the Middle East. He said there should be a Palestinian state within 1 year. Excuse me. The huge irony, it seems to me, that now the United States is the primary force against creating membership for the Palestinians in the United Nations.
Well, it's a great irony, and it's one that's in everybody's minds at the UN. I mean, it's been very often repeated to me around the corridors here that Obama stood up and said exactly that a year ago, and here is the US doing exactly the opposite. And also the US has been doing this in an extremely aggressive way. The lobbying of countries against the Palestinian initiative, both General Assembly members and Security Council members, has been extremely aggressive and in some cases unpleasant. I don't think the US has done itself any favors diplomatically this week at all.
Back to Daoud Kutab in Amman, Jordan. Apparently in Gaza, Hamas, which you mentioned earlier as being neutral and toward opposition to UN membership, closed down coffee houses that were showing the Abbas speech. What about Hamas and what about Gaza, and what role might it play if negotiations were resumed?
Well, there it's a different kind of irony. The ideological leadership of Hamas, politically, they say we have nothing against the actual going to the UN. The declaration request for the statehood is something we support. But they say it was done unilaterally by the Palestinians, the leadership of Abbas, without being part of a strategy, and Hamas is not part of that strategy. So it's a tiny squabble, I would say, within the Palestinian politics. I wouldn't give it much importance. I think it's just a kind of an internal issue that basically Hamas feels like they were not given enough credit or involvement in the decision-making.
Also on the program today, David Rothkopf. He is a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, former senior official in the Clinton administration. His most recent book is Superclass, The Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making. He blogs regularly at foreignpolicy.com. Good to have you on our program.
My pleasure.
Karen Ross said a moment ago that given the drama today at the United Nations, perhaps the United States and Israel might have to, or certainly the United States, might have to rethink their policy of being opposed to Palestinian membership in the United Nations. So what do you say to that?
Well, I don't think anything that happened today is going to change the policy of the United States or Israel. I think that the momentum behind what led to today has changed the dynamic in the region fairly dramatically. But given American politics, it's, you know, the likelihood that President Obama distances himself from Israel or embraces the Palestinians closely in the next 15 months is pretty much zero. Clearly, Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech, which was quite strong itself and confrontational, does not suggest that there is any window of opportunity there. I think things are slowly changing, but barring some extraordinary event like mass demonstrations in the streets of the Palestinian territories that are peaceful and the Israelis are unable to contain, that generate, you know, more and more support for this, I suspect this is going to move very slowly.
Daoud Kutab, is there any prospect for mass peaceful demonstrations in the streets of the Palestinian territories?
Look, there is an active nonviolent movement in Palestine. I think there might be some continuous demonstrating of some levels, but very few people have real confidence that the world community is change or effect is going to be any stronger than it was in the UN, and that didn't move Israel. So the fact that there is demonstrations in the West Bank will be important, but I doubt it's going to move either the U.S. foreign policy or the Israeli army policies.
David Rothkopf, what about what we heard from President Sarkozy yesterday and his role and his call for a new approach? Is there any chance for that?
Well, look, I think that there is there clearly a new approach is needed. I mean, I think the reason that you have such a rapturous response to President to Mr. Abbas today had to do with the fact that people's frustrations are manifesting themselves in a demand for at least some different approach. President Sarkozy has talked about a General Assembly agreement, which might produce some kind of a limited status a la the Vatican. That seems to make some sense, too. Clearly, the problem with the stance of the Israelis and the United States, let's return to the negotiation table, that's the only way to do this, is that it gets you right back in the quagmire you've been in, and everybody feels, I mean, almost, you know, I mean, a huge portion of the world's population feels, look, there is effectively a Palestinian state. There is a group of people who want to be independent. They have borders. They have a government. They have a diplomatic service. They have a flag. Let's call a spade and let's acknowledge this and let's work from that as the basis of the discussion. It seems fairly logical, but you know, when you break it down and you listen to Prime Minister Netanyahu says behind the scenes, or Hamas says behind the scenes, or Abbas says behind the scenes about there will never be a Jewish state, or we will not seek the UN in the case of Hamas, or Prime Minister Netanyahu talking about settlements continuing. Well, you know, it looks like for all the desire to break out, the old intractable problems are not actually being moved forward at all by any of this.
And has the U.S., do you think, been sort of moved out of the process?
Well, I think that's one of the most interesting things about this. For much of the past several decades, you know, there has been a process, a peace process, with the United States, you know, quarterbacking it, playing a leading role. But in this process, what happened? The Palestinians took the initiative. They came up with a new idea. The world backed that idea. The Israelis then responded by taking the initiative in U.S. politics and getting the Republicans to say Obama's distancing himself from our friends, and this put pressure on Obama, which forced him to react to that. Sarkozy took the initiative in the terms of the French, sort of being a leading voice for a European and others who seek something different. And the United States has been back on its heels. It's been reactive. It is not the leading player. And it's really the first time in sort of the history of this enduring dialogue where the United States' role has been so reactive and so secondary.
David Rothkopf again now at the Carnegie Endowment, formerly with the Clinton administration. We're going to take a very brief break and then continue this conversation. On Reporter's Notebook, the U.S. has escalated its accusations against Pakistan. We'll hear about that. You can join the conversation on our To the Point Facebook page. We'll be back in a minute with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
Warman Ali back with To the Point, talking today about a day of extraordinary drama at the UN, one that might in fact change the paradigm in the search for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. Then again, we hear it might not. David McCoskey is Senior Fellow and Director of the Project on the Middle East Peace Process at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which has contributed diplomats to various administrations. David McCoskey, it's good to have you on our program.
Good to be with you again, Warren.
We heard a moment ago from David Rothkopf that there is, after all, a Palestinian state, and the rest of the world has acknowledged that, with the exception primarily of the United States and Israel. Do you agree with that?
Well, first of all, I think the aspiration is clear that that's what you want, to bring dignity to both Palestinians and Israelis alike. I don't yet see that they're going to even have 9 members in the Security Council as it stands now to pass these ideas. So I think it's a bit jumping the gun, and I tend to believe that the only way to get at this is going to be through negotiations, although I don't agree with your other guests that it's business as usual, because I think President Obama outlined some ideas, and Netanyahu in his speech today suggested that he could move forward with that. Not that he agrees with every word of it, but that it was a basis to move forward. And I think that that's been missed by some of your other guests.
Elaborate on it. What did the president suggest, and what did Mr. Netanyahu say today that might suggest agreement?
Well, in May, he gave 2 speeches, which were not exactly embraced by Netanyahu, but he basically said that the territorial dimensions of this conflict had to be resolved on the issue of the pre-67 border with land exchanges, that if Israel kept a little more, it had to give within Israel proper. And that caused a ruckus also within, you know, President Obama's Democratic Party, not to mention the Republicans. I thought it showed a lot of bravery. I've been working on maps that the New York Times Online has now put on, that there are territorial scenarios that this would work. But what was missing is that America had the leverage in May, but what we didn't, you know, kind of cash in with is with our European allies to give the corollary to the Obama speech and have the Europeans say something, some tough love to the Palestinians the way Obama demonstrated political courage vis-a-vis the Israeli side. And we lost a good part of the summer on that. Once we gave the speech, the Europeans put it in their pocket, so to speak. But Netanyahu today came closer than he ever has after being openly hostile to the idea in May, basically saying, you know, let's basically proceed with that. And I think that was the one news today that emerged from these speeches. Otherwise, you know, a lot of the things were very familiar on both sides.
What about the settlements?
Yeah, well, the settlements is based on what Obama said, which is that there will be some settlement blocks adjacent to the old boundaries. Indeed, 80% of the settlers live in 5% of the land adjacent to those boundaries, but that's often missed. But then Israel will have to give equal amounts of land, to offset that. So I think that there is a way forward if the parties want to do it. I think President Obama set the way, but he feels that he's pretty much alone, and he's not getting support from the Europeans and others, and even domestically. But I don't think it's fair to beat up on President Obama the way others have done.
David Makovsky at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Let me go back to our first guest, Karen Ross, who's at the United Nations right now. He formerly was a British diplomat at the UN, now is head of the nonprofit diplomatic advisory group, Independent a Diplomat. What do you say to what we have just heard? Has President Obama and potentially Mr. Netanyahu, have they indicated that perhaps there is a new basis for negotiations?
No, I don't think they have. I mean, I think they're just reiterating business as usual. The U.S. set out its views on what a plausible settlement would look like, but in reality, it's been able to deliver very little in terms of Israeli commitments to some kind of a deal that looks something like that and a willingness to talk on that basis. Yes, Netanyahu is willing to talk, but he's made very clear that there are some red lines which are completely unacceptable to the Palestinians. These include things like borders, the status of Jerusalem, and, of course, settlements. So the fundamentals for a new negotiation are simply not there on the Israeli side, and the U.S. has not been able to push them back on that. And that's been the situation for some time, and really nothing has changed about that. And what you heard at the UN today, above all from the PLO, but also really largely from the world community, was immense frustration with that position, a real kind of international bellow that this is not good enough, that something else has got to be done.
Back to David Makovsky. On this program last week, we heard this, that according to Mahmoud Abbas, when the president first took office, he said that he wanted to make the end of the settlement building a precondition of negotiations, that the Palestinians had never made that a precondition in the past, but they agreed to do so. And then when the Israelis indicated that they wouldn't go along with that, Mr. Obama tried to talk Mr. Abbas out of it. After all, the way Mr. Abbas put it, according to our guest last week, was that he asked me to climb the tree and then he took away the ladder. What about, is that true?
Look, I was with President Abbas in Ramallah, where he said that to me. You know, he said, David, he said, I never made a settlement freeze a precondition, because I always knew if we were trying to find a solution, the settlements would be irrelevant. Wherever we drew the line, the settlement issue would be moot. He said, but I got boxed in by President Obama. Once he used the word freeze, I can't be less pro-Palestinian than the President of the United States. And so that got me up a tree, as you quoted it correctly. And then, Obama backed off from it, but I was stuck. So, yeah, I feel that we've, you know, as Hillary Clinton said in her speech she gave in December, you know, America basically wasted 2 years focusing on symptoms and the side issues. The core is getting the territorial issue resolved. It's not the only issue. We have to solve other issues. But if we can solve the territorial issue, then everything else is moot. And we, the speech that President Obama gave in May of 2011, I wish he gave 2 years earlier, because I feel we wasted 2 years over this. I think that's the view of many analysts. I don't know if you know Rob Malley and a few other who we basically believe that we wasted too much time, and we got to solve the problem. We can't just talk about symptoms, or else it's never going to end. And I, you know, the pizza analogy sometimes is taken too far. You know, we're talking about how to slice it, and one side is gobbling. I mean, this is just a little bit of crust here that will be irrelevant if we can solve the problem. If we just keep being paralyzed over this, we can fight about this forever. Let's solve it. Let's cut to the chase and end this darn thing already.
You said that the time has been, 2 years have been wasted, but you said earlier that you thought the president had been very brave.
He was. He was in May 2011. I wish he would have given that speech in May 2009. That was the right speech to give, what the president did. He did the right thing. I just believe he got nothing for it from the Europeans. You know, the domestic political environment didn't help things. But clearly, we lost much of the summer because Obama did give his major concessions, but the Europeans didn't reciprocate. And the reason why the Europeans are so important, and the reason why the quartet is important, it's not because of the eclipse of American power, or you know, but the quartet was key because of the interplay between the Europeans and the upcoming UN vote of today, you know, of the speeches and everything now, that it was key to keep the Europeans and the United States together. There needed to be transatlantic unity that could not be divided on this issue. And therefore, a lot of the focus went to the quartet, where in the past it had been focused purely on the United States. So I don't think it means an eclipse of America, the decline of the United States, the decline of Obama. I think that's taken, you know, way too far. It was a tactical move for this summer. It could have gone quicker if we would have lined up the Europeans before we gave the speech and got something for it, but we didn't. But anyway, we are where we are. And I just think people, you know, talking about the eclipse of Obama and American power, I think, have taken it way too far.
David Rothkopf, back to you with the Carnegie Endowment, formerly with the Clinton administration. Were you going that far when you said that the United States, for the first time, is really not playing that much of a role?
I just don't. I think it's playing a lesser role than it's played in the past. And clear, I mean, you know, there's no debating that the Palestinians were the ones that took the initiative. You could say the president gave a little bit on this 1967 borders thing, but you know, this is a little bit, you should forgive the expression, Talmudic to me. This is, you know, these are the old formulations getting pushed around a bit, you know, and it's a little bit like trading a little bit of land here for a little bit of land there. Yes, the territorial issues are important, but, you know, bigger issues have to do with things like the right of return or the recognition of Israel by the Palestinians, or resolving the issue between Hamas and Fatah or Jerusalem. You know, there's a lot to this that remains undone, and the president going an inch this way, which immediately put him into a political firestorm, which has got him boxed, where he's not going to be able to do anything really dramatic for another 15 months, if at all. You know, this is kind of the status quo. This is the repetition of the patterns that have made this process so ineffective for decades.
So are you glad, then, to see that the Palestinians did take the initiative? Do you think that this is a positive step?
I mean, it's a positive step if it turns into something positive. You know, apparently, you know, I read a report that Abbas, before he did this, went into another room and said, we will never recognize a Jewish state, and then goes out and gets applause. And if that's the case, it's not such a positive step because, you know, he's you know, trying to pursue peace in one hand and clearly not in the other. But having said that, A, if it breaks a pattern, it may be a positive step. And B, as I said, there is a state there of some form or another, and 126 countries in the world recognize it as a state already, which is 21 more than recognize Israel as a state, which is something. It's not nothing. You know, I think the U.S. and the Israelis have missed an opportunity to say, yes, sir, we agree. You deserve to be a state. you know, that this is the process that brought Israel into being, and now let's move to the next thing. We recognize your right to exist. You recognize our right to exist and regain the upper hand, which the Israelis have systematically given up with action after action over the course of the past 20 years.
Let me go back to our Palestinian journalist, Daoud Kutab, who is in Jordan. He's a former professor of journalism at Princeton University. Mr. Abbas today mentioned the Arab Spring. What about this in the context of the Middle East at large? And do you think people there will see, and diplomats will see, that things have in fact changed?
For sure, the you know, Abbas has become, you know, used to be called the paper tiger. He was a real tiger. Today, he stood up for what he believed in, and he was tough. And people are taken aback because they expected him always to be giving in to the, you know, powers to be or to the power balance. I think the Arab Spring, the Palestinian Spring, that has changed a lot, and that has added more pressure on Abbas, in addition to Hamas, to really do something and not to just be seen as appeaser, as a person who cooperates with the Israelis on security and gets nothing in return. So I think, yes, for sure, it's something that has changed both on the Palestinian side, and I think it's one of the reasons why the Americans are putting so much pressure not to have to veto, because they look hypocritical supporting the Arab peoples in Egypt and in Tunisia, but not supporting the Palestinians to set up their state. But, you know, to be honest with you, the discussion that David has had is very important, but there is one problem in that the issues between Palestinians and Israelis is not going to be resolved by rhetoric in the public sphere. It has to be done in private. The fact that both sides are ratcheting up the rhetoric is a proof of the failure of the diplomat and of the behind-the-scenes negotiations that is necessary to really produce an agreement that everyone will agree to. We will not reach an agreement on Palestine and Israel talking to the media or talking to the UN. But if there is nothing going on, we have to change the paradigm of negotiations. And I think that's what Abbas's move is. It's aimed to basically improve his negotiating ability afterwards. Now he has a stronger wind behind his back to make a stronger issue of negotiations.
So do you think what's happened at the UN today is essentially political theater?
Excuse me?
Do you think what happened today at the United Nations is essentially political theater?
I think we have a leader who has been very committed to being a nonviolent leader, and he basically has closed that issue of attacking Palestinians on the security level, and he has not received anything in return. He's not been able to show anything for his cooperation, some call it collaboration or even treason, in working with the Israelis. He needs to show something for it, and moving to the UN and defying the Israelis and the Americans is a political act, regardless of how it's seen. It is a political initiative that I think took many people by surprise, but it strengthened his hand, and it basically allowed him to gain from the international support that Palestinians normally get.
Karen Ross should have asked this question at the outset, but let me ask it now. What advantage would it be to the Palestinians to be recognized by the United Nations, either by the Security Council or alternatively, as I understand it, in a sort of lesser sense, by the General Assembly?
Well, they're two very different things. If the Security Council accepted membership of Palestine in the United Nations, that would be very significant. They would become a full member of the United Nations, and that would give them the freedom to join all sorts of international bodies. And I think it would change significantly the dynamics of the dispute between Israel and Palestine.
But nobody thinks that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen. What's available at the General Assembly is, at best, the status of an observer that is a state. That will, in many ways, I think, bolster Palestine's claim to be a state. For instance, in its applications to join various international bodies, the Palestinians also think that it will give them a kind of parity, legal or political, with Israel in the talks. But clearly it's a lesser thing than full membership. And it's not exactly clear that the legal
rights and privileges that might follow from becoming an observer state are as clear as the Palestinians would like. For instance, on the International Criminal Court, where they want the ICC to exercise jurisdiction over the occupied territory, but it's far from clear that the ICC will decide to do so.
David Rothkopf, do you think the United States and Israel should change their positions? Should they allow membership, or should they at least allow that sort of satellite role like the Vatican has for the Palestinians?
I think it would have been good had they done so in the past. Clearly, going forward, you know, if they can get something for it and it can move everybody closer to peace, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't. But as I said, it seems to me to be speculative and extremely unlikely given the political environment in the United States. The minute the president of the United States says anything that distances himself a little bit from the position of Prime Minister Netanyahu, Netanyahu has been getting on the phone and turning on the heat from the Republican side, and this is a weak president in a very precarious place economically who needs his base, particularly in a few key swing states where this is a critical issue. And so I just, you know, I mean, this is all interesting theoretically, but I just don't think he's going to move on this thing until either, you know, 2013 or you know, if he decided he only wanted to be a one-term president.
And, of course, just to add to the pressures on him, he just lost a seat in Congress in a New York district that has many conservative Jews who evidently voted against the Democrat.
Yeah, well, I think part of the thing is that it's part of an irony here, sad irony, because I think the president is sincere in trying to move this forward, that to the extent to which he does take a stand on behalf of the Israelis, he's still not trusted as a supporter within that community, and so he doesn't get credit for it. So he makes a sacrifice, and that impedes the process, and still he's not going to get the points that he wants to get politically.
Thank you all very much for being with us. David Rothkopf at the Carnegie Endowment, where he's a visiting scholar, formerly with the Clinton administration. His most recent book, Superclass, The Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making. David McCoskey, Senior Fellow, Director of the Project on the Middle East Peace Process at the Washington Institute of Near East Policy. Daoud Kutab, Palestinian journalist, former Princeton Professor of Journalism. And Karen Ross, former British diplomat at the United Nations, now a director of the Diplomatic Advisory Group, Independent Diplomat. Thank you so much, all of you, for being with our program today. We'll, of course, follow this as the days go on. Admiral Mike Mullen, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has become the highest U.S. official to accuse Pakistan's intelligence service, the ISI, of responsibility for attacks on U.S. targets in Afghanistan. We'll hear more about that in a moment on To the Point.
For more information about To the Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/to the point.
Warman Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. Here's Admiral Mike Mullen yesterday addressing the Senate Armed Services Committee with Defense Secretary Leon Panetta at his side.
The Haqqani Network, for one, acts as a veritable arm of Pakistan's Internal Services Intelligence Agency. With ISI support, Haqqani operatives planned and conducted that truck bomb attack, as well as the assault on our embassy.
Mike Mullen talking about recent attacks in Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan. Ahmed Rashid is a Pakistani journalist. He's based in Lahore. He's author of Descent into Chaos, The United States and the Failure of Nation Building in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia. It's always good to have you on our program.
Thank you, Warren.
First of all, what is the Haqqani Network?
Well, Jalaluddin Haqqani runs a tribal alliance in eastern Afghanistan, which has been in existence and led by him since the beginning of the war against the Soviet Union in 1979. And he's been very close. His family and himself and a lot of his relatives have lived in Pakistan since that period, although he belongs to Afghanistan. And the Haqqanis were part of the Taliban government in the 90s. And then after 9/11, there was a very crucial moment when the Americans and the Pakistanis approached him to dump the Taliban and dump al-Qaeda and join the Northern Alliance, which was then the main force fighting the Taliban, and he declined to do so. And since then, he's been in opposition to the Americans and to the Karzai government.
What's the evidence that he's responsible for terrorism and particularly for attacks against the U.S. embassy?
Well, this goes back a very long way. It goes back to some of the last battles that were fought in 2001, 2002, that were led by Jalaluddin Haqqani's younger sons, fighting the Americans, very fierce battles in which quite a few American special forces were killed. And since then, they have been able, in four or five provinces in eastern Afghanistan, they've put together an alliance which attacks the U.S. And attacks the Afghan forces. And more importantly, they really introduced urban terrorism for the first time about 4 years ago. They seem to have had the manpower, the educated urban Afghan who could slip into a city and carry out a suicide attack in a city, whereas the other Taliban, the main Taliban, did not have that ability. And I think the evidence is overwhelming now that there's no doubt that he has carried out a number of the most spectacular attacks that have taken place, as the Americans are now charging.
What about his relationship to the ISI, the Internal Services Intelligence Agency of Pakistan? Is Admiral Mullen right?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, the Pakistanis have admitted to the Americans at least 2 years ago that they, you know, that they did have a relationship with Haqqani, and they were in touch, that they weren't supporting him, that they had nothing to do with his fighting, but that they were in touch, and that they, in fact, were trying to encourage the Karzai government and the Americans to open negotiations with Haqqani. Now, that has never taken off. Last year, there was the speculation that, in fact, some members of the Haqqani group had visited Kabul, had met with the U.S. and NATO commanders and with President Karzai's government, and had agreed not to attack Kabul city. And in fact, for about half of last year and about the beginning of this year, there was a kind of truce in which Kabul was not attacked. And that was considered to have been brokered by the ISI for Karzai, you know, and for the foreign forces. So it's very well known that the Haqqanis have very close relations with Pakistan. Now, as to the specific charges that Admiral Mullen is making, of course, that is based on U.S. intelligence, which he is not disclosing, that the Haqqanis carried out the two most lethal attacks recently, one on Kabul and one on a American outpost.
What about the reaction in Pakistan to these charges? And does Pakistan believe that the admiral might be laying the groundwork for some kind of military action by the United States in Pakistan?
Well, first of all, there has been a veritable war of words today and yesterday. The White House has weighed in today with a very strong statement asking Pakistan to work a move against the Haqqani network, and the Pakistani Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, and most significant of all, the Army Chief, General Kayani, have also made very strong statements. General Kayani has actually criticized Mullen directly, saying he's just trying to create a blame game, which has been very detrimental to peace in Afghanistan. Now, I think the bottom line of all this is basically the initial threat that was made by the Americans, which was that if Pakistan does not move, then there will be unilateral American action. Now, there's been a lot of speculation in the last 48 hours as to what that will mean. Clearly, Pakistan is not going to move against the Haqqani network. The problem is that, you see, the Haqqani network is very much part of Pakistan's overall strategy in Afghanistan, which involves keeping the Indians out, making sure that in any negotiations, Pakistan has a central position to play, something that, you know, the Americans have not necessarily agreed upon. So, you know, the Haqqani network is not just a tactical use value to Pakistan. It's part of its long-term strategy in Afghanistan. And the Americans have understood that. But the whole issue is that, unfortunately, neither side have been able to get to grips with tackling this issue. What could compensate Pakistan for dumping the Haqqanis or for persuading the Haqqanis to lay down their weapons and really talk to Karzai? The other factor is that the Haqqanis are also very closely linked to Al-Qaeda. There's no question that Haqqani gave refuge to Osama bin Laden when he escaped from Afghanistan back in 2001. And a lot of the Haqqani training and expertise that they've had, for example, in urban warfare, has come from Al-Qaeda. So, you know, it's not clear exactly. I don't think the Haqqanis have broken their links with Al-Qaeda. And that, of course, makes the whole issue of negotiations with the Haqqani group for the Americans much more difficult.
Okay. We'll see if the war of words turns into something hotter. Ahmed Rashid, it's always good to have you on our program. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Producers of To the Point, Francis Anderton, Christian Bordahl, Andrea Brody, Katie Cooper, Sonia Geis, and Caitlin Schamberg, Technical Director Mike Newport, Managing Producer Karen Radziner. Special thanks to Julia Fluch and the John Coltrane family. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point.
PRI, Public Radio International.